Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and we appreciate you listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. This is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, and if you are in the listening area, maybe you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to come by and visit with us. We are located just outside of Boone, off of Highway 105 South, Baird's Creek Road. And we are 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And so that's on the, what we call the Fosco side of town, but not, it's not in Fosco, but you have to go in that direction to get there. But anyway, we're glad to be here today. We're thankful for all the many blessings the Lord's given to us. And we certainly want to say that our thoughts and prayers are going out to the victims of the fires out in Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, and I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the news about all of that, but there's a lot of sad things when you think about it. I think the last I heard was that 14 people had lost their lives, and 1,200 and some buildings, businesses, homes, and so they certainly have had a great trial through all this. So we're praying for them. Just wanted to mention that this morning. But I want to say hello to Noah. He's here today. And how's your day so far?
Going well.
Good.
Happy to be here this morning. We do want to say welcome to those who are listening in, those who are listening right here on AM 1450, WATA, and 96.5. Those who out of Boone, North Carolina, those who listen in on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and our listeners on 89.1 KPGT The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners, and once again, count it a privilege to be here. We've been talking about the subject of education in America, or the role of education in early America, and it wasn't mine. Had a little fall in here. But we've been talking about that and looking at it. This is part number three. And we have saw a little bit about the role of education, or the role of religion, in early education in America. And we talked about that a week or so ago. Our Judeo-Christian heritage in America is one of education. And if you look back through not just American history, but church history, world history, wherever you find the Jewish people, wherever you find the Christian people, you find that they had a great desire to teach their people how to read, and to teach those that they came in contact how to read, because God put His word, God put His message from heaven in words. We call that the Bible. And so it is very important that people know how to read, so they can hear, so they can find out for themselves what God says. Now, I know other cultures and other areas, you know, other places in the world, they have their own language, their own writing and things like that. But in throughout the history of the world, once upon a time, reading was for a privileged few. Not everybody enjoyed an education. But in studying church history, for example, the Waldensians, just one group of Christians that we find, they taught their children, they taught their girls how to read, because they wanted them to know how to read God's Word. For many, many years, it was only for the men to learn how to read, or royalty to learn how to read. But they taught everybody. They taught all of their family, all of their children how to read. It was very, very important. So education is a good thing. Education is a Bible thing. It's a theme we find all throughout the Bible. The Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And so anytime you find training, teaching, learning, all of these things we find in the Bible. So We've sort of talked about that. We talked about that once upon a time in America, the home, the church, the state were all in agreement as to what education was and how to go about that. And we talked about the three R's. We talked about the emphasis in early American education, not only reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also the teaching of religious fundamentals, and also morality. I gave this example last week. Congress, in the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, put it like this: religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. And so it's very interesting how that is phrased: religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government. Who would have thought, who would teach that today or talk about that today, that it was necessary to good government to teach religion, morality, and knowledge? Religion is first, morality is second, knowledge is third. And that it is also necessary to the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged. Religion is this. Religion is the truth about God, that we have a creator, that we are answerable to him, that he should be worshiped, that he's the creator, that he's the judge of the world and of us. Religion teaches those things. Morality is a standard of behavior distinguishing right from wrong. There is such a thing as this is right and this is wrong. I know in our day and time, and we'll eventually get to, how did it get to be like this, where what used to be right is now considered wrong, and what is wrong is considered to be right. Things are turned upside down on their head. Well, do you know the Bible foretells that day would come, that there would be those that would call evil good and good evil? Well, how do you get to a place like that? Well, we'll look at that. But there is such a thing as morality, and the Bible teaches it. It is wrong to covet. It is wrong to steal. It is wrong to lie. It is wrong to kill. It is wrong to blaspheme. And so there's a lot of things we could look at. Morality. There are also things that are right, that are good. It's good to love your neighbor. It's good to be kind. It's good to have mercy. It's good to have compassion. It's good to show understanding. So religion, morality, and then knowledge. And knowledge is reading, writing. I mean, if we were just going to boil it down to the basic, what does a person need to learn? Reading, writing, and arithmetic. This has been taught for hundreds of years now. But today, what we're going to look at, we're going to talk about something that is interesting to me. I've got a lot out of this study, and we can look back in our country and think about the Americanization of education. That's what I want to talk about today on this third part of talking about education in America, the Americanization, that's a long word, of education. Well, what do you mean by that? A study of early American education points us to a system. If we look back at education in America, and we would ask ourselves, well, where did that come from? Who brought that over? Well, the Pilgrims, of course. They were here first. The Pilgrims and people from England. But if we look at it as a whole and just study it out, it is not a English system of education. Nor is it a French system of education, nor a German or a Swedish or a Dutch system of education. And people came to America. It didn't take long. People came from all parts of the world. People came from Africa. People came from Russia. Lots of different countries. You know, America's considered sometimes a great melting pot. We've all heard that. But if you look back at education in America, for a long time, early on, you couldn't say that it was distinctly one of those systems brought over from another country. We could say that education in early America was not wholly European or from Europe. One of the leading factors that led up to the Declaration of Independence. And there was a great, you have to realize that during the early 1700s, there was a great controversy. Should America declare her independence from England? Should the colonies declare their independence from England? And many said no, and many said yes, and many didn't care one way or the other, just so they could live their lives and be free. But one of the leading factors leading up to the Declaration of Independence was the fact that life in America was different. Life in America was not life in England. Our founders, the people that began this country, that came to this country, the pioneers that came to this country, the pilgrims that came to this country, they came and they basically set up their homes in the wilderness. And they come to they're separated from their mother country. They're separated from their own country by thousands of miles, by the Atlantic Ocean. There was no king on the ground. You know, you had to travel back across the ocean to get an audience with the king, the parliament. All of that stuff, all of their system of government was not here to begin with in America. It was back in England. There was no magistrate. There was no church. And what I mean by that, there was no building set up as the church. There was no hierarchy of none of them. I mean, everything they had, they brought with them. They brought in their hearts. They didn't bring the buildings. They didn't bring the religious system that they came out of. You know, what was already established in England stayed in England. When they came, it was just them. There was no hospital when they got off the ships. There was no court system. There were no schools set up like they had in England and France and Germany and all these places that they came from. When you think about, maybe you've heard people talk about American ingenuity. I'm sure that most of you, if you think about it, you've heard that phrase before. Good old American ingenuity. That is not something that somebody dreamed up in some marketing department somewhere to sell Ford, Chevrolet, or Dodges, or to sell something else. American ingenuity. Where does that phrase come from? The people who came to this country to begin with, they were true pioneers, meaning that they literally set up their homes, set up their houses in the midst of a great wilderness. But think about the result of that. We're talking about education in America, early education in America. The result of coming to this country and setting up house, home, business, church, government, all of that had to be fresh start. I mean, basically manufactured out of just the raw materials that were here. The result of that was that America became a nation of where everybody was an inventor, where everybody was an innovator. What do I mean by that? Everything they did would come under the category of saying something like this: we're doing the best we can under the circumstances. They could say we're doing the best we can with what we have, with what resources we have. They didn't just run down to Home Depot and grab everything they needed. You know, I'm just saying, it wasn't there. They had to make their living out of the forest, out of the ground, out of what was here and what was available. And so how are you going to educate your children when your list of priorities as a newcomer to the new world, and that's what they called it at that time. How are you going to educate your children when your list of priorities is number one? What do we have to do when we get there? Well, we have to survive. What do we have to do in order to survive? Well, we got to have food. Food involves not running to the grocery store, but think about it. They had to go hunting. They had to go trapping. They had to forage. They had to learn what was edible and what was not edible. They had to prepare the land. They had to sow their crops. They had to harvest their crops. This took a huge amount of their time, just getting food. They had to get water. They had to make sure they had water to drink. They had to have shelter, which involved cutting trees into logs and later on into boards and things like that. They had to, what they wore over here eventually wore out. They had to mend their clothes. They had to make their clothes. They had to chop wood for fires, which was something that was year round. And so you think about what did they have to do just to survive? It took up a great, great deal of their time. Their counterparts in different places in Europe were reading all the what was called the classics. Their education revolved around that. Well, you come to America, you don't have time to sit around and read the classics. And even in America, very early on, you have the coming about of newspapers, short articles, periodicals, pamphlets. You know, I've studied about Thomas Paine's Common Sense. That was a pamphlet. That was a very short little book put out for the population to consume. They didn't have time to sit around and read volumes of books. A lawyer during that day and time was not someone that went off to some big university, but what a lawyer literally, and I've read this in history books, they would gather enough law books to fill two saddlebags most of the time, saddlebags on a horse, and they would get them placed. And if you heard the phrase, hang out my shingle, they would hang out a little sign, lawyer. What made them a lawyer? They had those law books. They'd read them. Maybe they had studied under somebody else. But what I'm saying is when they come to America, home many times was a one-room log cabin. And visitors would come from England. We're talking about early education in America. They would be shocked at how people were living in America. They would be appalled by the conditions that they found here, that people would come here and live like this. And so they called it the Indianization of the English, that these English people, German people, French people, all these people from Europe, they were coming over here, and my goodness, they were living like Indians. They called it the Indianization, and that wasn't a good thing. They were shocked at that. They were appalled at that. And what was happening was these settlers, pioneers, these pilgrims, they were coming, they adopted Indian ways, the Indian ways that worked. Because remember, the first thing they've got to do if they're going to make it in the New World, they've got to survive. And so the reason they adopted some of the Indians' ways were that it's because it worked. And they learned how the Indians farmed and grew corn. We know that from the story of the pilgrims. They were taught by the Indians how to hunt here in America. They were taught about how to cure meat. They started wearing clothes that were buckskin. You know, you think about Daniel Boone, a coonskin cap, although he didn't wear a coonskin cap. He wore something that looked like a wore-out cowboy hat. But anyway, just a floppy old thing. But they started, making their clothes out of leather instead of out of cloth. And some of them started wearing moccasins instead of shoes. And a lot of them just run around barefooted. But then on the other hand, a lot of the Indians, they started adopting English ways. They started living more like white folks did. And they began to, for one example, English settlers, they taught them how to boil lobster and serve it with potatoes and a side of rice and corn or something like that. Hey, that's a pretty good thing to learn, how to do stuff like that. They started, here's something that's not so good. The settlers taught them how to smoke tobacco, how to begin to use tobacco. They begin to use the English language. They begin to learn about the English religion. Well, today, if you study that, it's called, it would just be called Studies in Multiculturalism. Then it was just called survival. We're just learning from the land and from our conditions around us how to survive. When the settlers came to this country, they had already, if you came from Germany, if you came from France, if you came from England, well, they already had universities over there that were hundreds and hundreds of years old. People would go off to college or university in Europe, and they would learn Latin, which was a dead language even then. I mean, it was not used at all. But they would learn Latin, they would learn art, they would learn theories, all of these things. But this new generation of Americans that were born in America, they couldn't go off to university. But what they had lots and lots of we called it when I was in the military, OJT, on-the-job training. And so they had a very basic education. I would not argue with that. They didn't have these big centuries-old universities to go off to. They had the three R's. They had reading, writing, and arithmetic. They had religion taught to them. They had the truth of God and His Word, and they had morality, that this is right and this is wrong. Their education was not primarily theory. In the great universities of Europe, they were studying a lot of theory about the universe, about the origin of species, Charles Darwin and all that stuff. That came from England. But their education in America had to be practical. And so they learned to learn differently. That's what I'm saying today. Education in America, early education in America, they had to learn differently than they were learning in Europe. In Europe, the scientists over there, they were studying ancient cultures, dead languages, classics, origins, all of these kinds of things. Our scientists in America were inventing practical things, necessary things, things that they needed in order to survive. Now, one of the most famous inventors that we have in America, we talk about him all the time. Not only is Benjamin Franklin famous for his political contribution, but he is also famous for his practical contributions. I am benefiting right now from an invention of Benjamin Franklin. And what are you talking about? I have a pair of glasses on. Benjamin Franklin invented bifocals. Look through the top and it's normal. Look through the bottom and it's magnified. They learn to learn differently. They learn to create out of necessity, not out of theory. And it started a whole generation and generations, and this is what I said at the beginning, a nation of inventors and innovators. Benjamin Franklin invented bifocals. Benjamin Franklin, we've all heard the story of the kite, and he put a key on the bottom of the kite, and it's a good thing he didn't get electrocuted to death. But, you know, he invented the lightning rod. Look at all that they begin to learn about electricity, how to harness it, how to use it. He invented the Franklin stove. Now, what that is, most all stoves today are off of that pattern. A Franklin stove was a metal box that had an upside-down siphon in it. And so you could keep smoke out of the room and heat in the room. Why, in Europe, they're over there, they're cutting down forests, trying to heat castles and great big houses with an open fireplace. And if you've ever had a house that had an open fireplace, that's about the most useless thing in your house. And I've had one before. It's just for looks. It is very, very inefficient. Well, Benjamin Franklin realized that. Others were working on it as well. And he read from here and read from there. And he done his own studies. And he invented a metal box. And you could cook on it. Man, that's great. Their way of learning was out of necessity. They had to have, everything. Look what came out of that. Later on, electricity, modern travel, trains, cars, planes. Where were those things invented? Not in Europe, in America. Cars, planes, the Wright brothers, all of that. Telegraph, telephones. Modern technology. America became a nation of inventors, innovators. Not all the great inventions came from America. I like to say this, just the best ones, you know, just the greatest ones, space travel, all of these things. I'm saying all this to point out something, that the best education you can get is not how much it costs. Now, we've gone a long ways away from this, what made America great. The best education is not one that costs the most. It is not one that revolves around theory, around things. Man, I'm amazed at the students that are paying big money for diplomas in majors that I doubt they'll ever be able to make a living off of. I doubt, you know, I hear somebody say, I'm majoring in this, and I ask them, you know, what is that? What is that good for? Who's going to pay you for that? The best education is one that is not gotten by privilege, but the best education you can have is one that is born out of necessity, meaning this, I learn because I want to. I'm learning because I have to. I want a better way to live. I want a better way to travel. I want a better way to farm. I want a better way to do my job. I want to be more efficient. That kind of an education, that I'm talking about the Americanization of education and our great nation. So many of our blessings that we have today came from those that attended the University of Life, the University of Necessity, the University of Hard Knocks, the University of Roll Up Your Sleeves and Get to Work and Do Something, not just sit around and theorize about it. You know, there's a verse in the book of Proverbs. It says, the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. That means debt. If you just sit around and talk about something, there's no profit in that. But there's profit in labor. That is what the Bible says. The talk of the lips tendeth to penury, just talking about stuff. But in all labor, there is profit. Our nation, now I have a unique perspective. I think a lot of people could not say this, but I live, my wife and I, very early on in our marriage, we lived in England for 3 years. I was in the United States Air Force. You would think England, older, better. That is not the case. Even then, in the late 80s, early 90s, England was 20 or 30 or 40 years behind where we were at that same time in America. What made America great? Our early people, settlers, came, invented, innovated, made it a better country. The Americanization of education. What did we start out with? The three R's, God, religion, morality. Jesus said in John 8:32, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And what we did in America, we took the best from all the different places that we came from, Europe, England, France, Germany, etc., took all our knowledge, all that they brought here, and took these different pieces and made the best country, the best nation in the world. I'm thankful for America. I'm thankful for the blessings of liberty. God has blessed us and made our nation great. I appreciate you listening. I hope you have a great day and that God blesses you. Let's do remember those that have suffered so much down with all the forest fires. Noah's going to come and give her contact information.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to reach us, you can through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.